and get comfortable for hour two.
Okay, welcome back. We are talking with William Henry, investigative mythologist, and we are, of course, talking about, well, many things, but primarily COP15, the blue spiral up in Norway, and basically how things seem to be derailing into a new world order here, pretty much. And there's a few things I'd like to touch upon here in the first section here for a second hour, William, in terms of basically how symbolism affects us, because a lot of the symbolism right now concerning not only COP15, but about global warming overall, is basically, it's about turning things cold, basically. We're seeing polar bears everywhere, we're seeing iceberg, we're seeing cold things, and on the surface, it seems to me that, okay, they're trying to tell us that it's becoming warmer and warmer all the time, although, factually, it's actually turning cooler right now. If you check up some of the science, and the only fact is that in some of the rural areas, it's getting colder, but in city areas, it's going slightly warmer, and that's kind of a no-brainer in terms of if you just look at how much electricity and so forth we consume. But basically, I want to ask you a little bit about what you feel or what you see when you see all this symbolism around us. So to me, it's almost like they're preparing us to move into a colder climate. They're sending out the signal of ice all the time. Do you have any thoughts about that at all? Do you see where they're trying to put this, so to speak, William?
No, but I see your observation, I've noticed that too. Especially with the COP15 logo, it's like I thought this. You know, as we said a moment ago, this is all supposed to be warm and fuzzy and make you feel good. We're saving the planet here, and all the imagery is more about freezing and ice and this sort of thing. It is very strange, but I think you've hit it that we really need to pay attention to this symbolism and really look at their logos, because that communicates what in many instances could be the true message of what is behind it. Again, we talked about the Obama campaign and the intention behind that logo and wanting to communicate the message that this is the new day. And so by learning or beginning to pay a little bit more attention to the symbolism here and the actual iconography of what is being presented, I think we get the true meaning behind the events.
What do you think when it comes to like true environmental problems? You alluded to this a little bit earlier as well. When I'm thinking about environmental problems, I see GMO, for instance, and Monsanto going in and putting in Terminator seed technology. They even have mercury in the new so-called green light bulbs. There are true environmental problems out there. And also in connection with this, I think that there's a lot of technology out there which actually could provide a way much more efficient propulsion systems and the way we heat our houses and so forth. But there's so little discussion about this, William. What's your take on that?
Well, this is something, again, people are going to have to raise their awareness about and start demanding that these technologies come out. But it's tricky to me in part because I'm not a real proponent of some of this technology. For example, I saw a report last night on one of the cable stations, I think it was CNN, where one of their doctors was talking about this latest research into cell phones and brain cancer. And they were acknowledging that, hey, the safe bet is you don't want to be going around with your cell phone stuck to your ear all the time. So what's the solution? Well, put on one of these Bluetooth devices. And it's like, okay, there it is right there. I mean, here's just another example of how this technology is going to be starting to be kind of shoved down our throat, but it's not necessarily the technology that we really want. I know you've done a lot of work on this whole idea of transhumanism and some of these other things, and I think that that is a major part of what the ultimate plan is here for us, is to entice us with all these transhuman technologies and get us out of our spiritual basis, because if we're transhuman, if we're part human, part machine, we don't really care if the air is clean, because we're going to have a filter installed in us. We don't care if our water is filthy. We're going to have filters installed in us to take care of it. And the solution that is always being presented is a technological one. We need to come in with this technology or that technology. And it's like, well, okay, part of it we do need, but then parts of it, I'm very certain, we can live without. And so it's just trying to come up with that balance.
Absolutely. And there's another thing that you mentioned in your article, William. It has to do with the, again, tying back to the symbolic interpretation of the apotheosis and basically Jesus in the purple haze and basically coming out of this spiral. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that for us.
Yeah, that is something I've been very fascinated by for a number of years. I talked about it in my Morph presentation, Morph, the light body, secret of light body activation. And that is that many times when you see Jesus portrayed in his resurrected form, or ascended form, he's wearing a purple robe. Or in some of the ascension scenes, he's shown with the purple robe on, and sometimes in front of a purple gateway. He might have purple clothes on, purple robe, purple gateway, or bright white clothing indicating the light body in front of this purple or blue gateway. And I've been intrigued by this because you have researchers like Terence McKenna and others that say that what this purple robe represents is a sheath or a covering that might even be manufactured by the body, by the human body, that is used for interdimensional travel. And that made perfect sense to me when I went back to these transfiguration scenes where Jesus has got this purple robe on and he's standing in front of an open gateway. It seems that, yes, that he has created or manufactured this substance, perhaps some kind of an oil even, because when Enoch went into the heavens, the Archangel Michael greeted him and rubbed an oil all over his body that made him equal to the other angels. So there are accounts of these substances that can alter us, that ultimately prepare us for interdimensional travel. And in the article, I was thinking about that. At the same time, I was thinking about Jimi Hendrix's song, Purple Haze, which was originally called Purple Haze, Jesus Saves. And when I researched it out, I was kind of amazed by the prophetic sense in a dream that Jimi Hendrix had that prompted him to write Purple Haze. In the dream, Jimi Hendrix said he was walking under the ocean, and he saw this purple haze or cloud all around him. And he looked down, he said, upon the world, indicating to me that he's maybe in a dream state. He's outside his body. He's outside the earth because he's looking down on the world. And he saw an unborn fetus waiting to be born. And then at the same time, he saw spirits of the dead leaving the earth. And he heard screams from the children that he said were reaching into the heavens. And then Hendrix said the earth became engulfed in a great flood, and now he's walking under that sea. The purple haze or cloud surrounds him and engulfs him. And he says in the dream that he got lost in the purple haze and he was terrified, which is kind of interesting because the word haze means to terrify or to frighten. But Hendrix said Jesus saved him. Jesus was in the purple haze. And I'm thinking, well, this is, you know, a lot of people said, well, Hendrix was on drugs when he wrote that. This is about drugs. This is about LSD, or it's about a strain of marijuana called purple haze. Hendrix is saying it wasn't about that. And he said emphatically it wasn't about that. It was about this experience that he had with Jesus in the purple haze. And that goes along perfectly with the Christian depictions of Jesus in the purple robe in front of this cloud or gateway that is, to me, an interdimensional portal of some kind.
And you tie this together as well then in your book, Freedom's Gate, when you talk more about the apotheosis of George Washington that you mentioned. And is this tied in with the Capitol's dome, or what is the connection there, William?
Yeah, a funny thing happened. I started researching. I've been interested in this painting that's in the dome of the U.S. Capitol for a number of years. It's called The Apotheosis of George Washington. It was painted by a former Vatican painter named Constantino Brumidi in 1865. It shows President Washington in a heavenly scene, sitting on a rainbow with a purple robe on his lap. He's surrounded by angelic beings and five pagan deities. Now, until last year, no one had looked at that painting and made an attempt at decoding it. They've talked about it historically, but nobody ever really looked at the mythological or symbolic significance of it until I and my co-author on my book, Freedom's Gate, Dr. Mark Gray, came along and started working on this. It was funny because I met Dr. Gray. I was giving a presentation near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where Dr. Gray lives, and I was talking about this painting. I said, look, you got Washington on the rainbow. He's surrounded by these angelic beings and these pagan deities, which we can get to in a moment. But more importantly, Washington is surrounded by 72 stars and in a perfect circle. And I said, I prefer to call that gate of stars a stargate. And Dr. Gray got all excited. He had been to my presentations before. And the next thing I know, we start working together because he's like, are you saying the United States Capitol is a stargate? And what I'm saying is that the United States Capitol, the dome of the U.S. Capitol, encodes Stargate metaphysics. It tells how to transform ourselves into star beings or to liberate ourselves through the spiritual alchemical process. And I can say that because what we discovered in this painting was that Brumidi, this master painter who came from the Vatican, who was actually exiled by the Vatican, came to the United States Capitol armed with what we think of as all of the alchemical secrets known to Brumidi's great inspiration, Raphael, as well as Michelangelo. He comes and he starts painting in this dome. He paints Washington as a deified being, and I show in my presentations and in the book Freedom's Gate, when Washington is portrayed on a rainbow, that's exactly how the resurrected Jesus is portrayed in Christian art. Once he goes through this gateway we've been talking about, he's in the ascended realms, and he too is shown sitting on a rainbow. Furthermore, when the Tibetans talk about their lamas who have achieved the ultimate enlightenment, the ultimate awakening, they call that the great perfection, and they show those lamas, the perfected ones, either on a rainbow, in a rainbow, or surrounded by rainbow light, and they call this perfected body the rainbow body. And so we connected all three of those traditions, the Christian, the Tibetan, and the early American idea of Washington on the rainbow, and said it's all telling the same story. If we're going to go through this Stargate, we've got to transform or perfect ourselves. And remember, that's something Obama was talking about back in Oslo. So when we're looking at this painting, what Dr. Gray and I discovered and pointed out for the first time since 1865 was that the five pagan gods that surround George Washington are Mercury, Hephaestus, the god of smithcraft and alchemy, Ceres, the goddess of earth, Athena, the goddess of wisdom and the goddess of war, and Poseidon, the god of water. Those five pagan gods are the five gods that the Vatican had spent 1,600 years trying to get rid of. They're also the five symbols of earth, air, fire, water, and space-time, the five elements of alchemy. This painting is like, we think of it as the ultimate alchemical icon. It tells us how to transform ourselves, how to go through that gateway. And so in my presentations and in my work throughout 2008 and early 2009, I had been saying, the U.S. Capitol is a model for a stargate. It's a portal. The painting, the apotheosis of George Washington, is the key to higher consciousness. Furthermore, when you're in the dome of the Capitol, domes are symbolic of the human head, because the word dome is slang for head. So when you're in the U.S. Capitol dome, you're inside your head. And so when we're looking up through this gate of 72 stars, a very important number to Graham Hancock and others, it's a processional number, talks about the 26,000-year cosmic cycle. When you're looking through that gate of stars into the heavenly realms, you're actually looking up through a hole in your head, a hole in the sky. The stargate we're looking for is in our consciousness. And we're modeling this. We're learning how to activate our dome. And specifically, we're learning how to activate the pineal gland through this process to get it to release those secretions that contain the secrets that transmute us into the rainbow body. And I'm saying, and what I did is I actually invited people. I said, come to Washington, D.C. with me. Let's lay on our backs together. Let's look up through this stargate, perceive Washington in the heavenly realms, and recognize we too can perfect ourselves and transform into these star beings. Well, what happens is in September of 2009, Dan Brown's new book, The Lost Symbol, comes out. What does Dan Brown say? Well, he says there's a lost symbol and a lost portal in the United States Capitol. It's a stargate. The key to higher consciousness is in the apotheosis of George Washington. And at the end of the book, he has Robert Langdon go into the Capitol, lay on his back, and say the apotheosis is a key to higher consciousness. And he actually has him hallucinate as he's looking into this painting. And Langdon now sees that painting open into the stars. He says the pineal gland is the key to activating this higher consciousness. And the way Dr. Gray and I feel about it is that we're living embodiments of what Dan Brown wrote about in that book, because Brown said there is a consciousness, a higher consciousness, that flows through the imagery in the United States Capitol. And it is that higher consciousness that we can tap into it. Millions of people around the world can tap into the consciousness that is there. In the apotheosis of George Washington, we can change the world. And Dr. Gray and I feel like, yes, that's true. In fact, we're living embodiments of it, Dan. And our work was published long before yours, which proves that that consciousness is real, and we tapped into it as well. And then Lord Monckton comes out and says, the apotheosis is at hand. And I'm just sitting here going, until a year ago, nobody ever heard of that word apotheosis.
That is weird, huh?
Now all of a sudden, millions of Dan Brown readers are keying in on that word. You got this Lord Monckton talking about world government. And I'm saying that the key to apotheosis is that we're talking about how to transform ourselves before going through a stargate. And one opens over Norway, just out of the blue. Happens to be over this conference Lord Monckton had been talking about. So go figure.
What do you think about, are they trying to portray George Washington as the new kind of messiah in that sense, of the new Atlantis, or is he more of a symbol here? What do you think?
Well, that's a really good question. I don't have a final answer on it. This began immediately after his death. In the book Freedom's Gate, I collected all of the images I could find, and I've got four or five of them that are just astonishing, that show the ascension or apotheosis of George Washington. There were several of these paintings that were done showing him being lifted into the heavens by angels going through an open sun gate. And as you know, in Egyptian symbolism, the ancient Egyptians viewed our sun, our star, as a tunnel. It was the sun tunnel, the star tunnel, or what today we call a star gate. And this is why in Christian art you'll see Jesus in front of the sun, because the sun is the way and the truth and the light. The way to heaven is through the sun, the S-U-N. And so they've got Washington here as this resurrected being sitting in front of this open sun tunnel or stargate. And this is all, to me, stargate metaphysics. Did Washington ascend? I can't say that for sure. Are we witnessing over the course of the past couple hundred years the elevation, the apotheosis of Washington into a deity? Yes, we did, up until about 1865 or so, when Brumidi painted the apotheosis in the dome. It was widely believed, widely thought, that Washington had achieved this elevated status. Today, we think that's insane. There's no way we can even believe Washington is a Christ-like being. But listen, I mean, think about how the whole thing played out in the Christian story. I mean, for the first 150 years after Jesus' birth, they weren't sure who he was. It wasn't until a couple 300 years after his death that all of a sudden the creed was put together, that this is who Jesus was in terms of him being the Son of God, the only Son of God, and resurrected and all of this. And so maybe we're witnessing something like that happening with Washington. It's yet to be seen. But I want to pull in one other factor that I think your listeners will be intrigued by, or at least give them some food for thought here, is what became to me sort of one of the ultimate reveals, if you will, that's in the dome of the Capitol. Washington, first, let me say this. The Tibetans teach that this rainbow body teaching, this perfection of the human body into a being of light, this teaching did not come from Earth. They tell us that it's taught in 13 star systems in addition to our own. So when we're looking at the apotheosis and we're seeing Washington sitting there on a rainbow, like a Christ-like being, we're thinking, okay, what's going on here? What's the message? Mm-hmm. And then you see those pagan gods around him, and you see, okay, the message is that this is about alchemy. This is about us transmuting the human element into light, preparatory to going through this stargate or wormhole and achieving ultimate liberation and freedom. But then you look at the 13 maidens that surround George Washington. They all have stars on their heads. And when you go to the Capitol, they'll tell you, oh yeah, those 13 maidens, those represent the 13 original colonies. But my thing was, well, how could that be? That's a heavenly scene. Washington isn't shown on Earth. He's up there in heaven. So how can those 13 maidens with stars on their heads be the colonies? And then I just made the connection. Wait a minute. Could those 13 maidens with stars on their heads represent the 13 other star systems where this great perfection rainbow body teaching is taught? And if so, is it indicating that Earth, our star system, Sol, as it's called, is part of a federation, for lack of a better word, of star systems where this enlightenment teaching is taught? And is it now time for us for this disclosure to happen that we are part of, we are a colony in a federation of star systems? That's what I think is happening.
And how about some of the, like if we look at some of the symbols contained in the dome, we have one sitting to the right of Washington holding a fasci. What do you make of that, William?
Yeah, that's liberty. The fasci is a symbol that's been kind of passed around like a baton. It started out in Crete, where it was a symbol of the divine feminine, a symbol used by the goddess culture for of divine transformation. It was the double-headed axe. They equated it with the butterfly, symbol of metamorphosis. Then Rome came along and turned it into a symbol of imperial power, Roman power. And I think that's one of the meanings that we're to get here in the U.S. Capitol, because Washington, D.C. was considered the new Rome. There is clearly an effort here to duplicate the temples of Rome in Washington, D.C. Yes. The United States Capitol and the Vatican are virtually mirror images of one another on the outside and on the interior. And so when we see that, we're thinking, okay, this is either a symbol of fascism, or it's a symbol of transformation. And in this case, it seems to me to be more of a symbol of transformation. And I can say that because there, as we document in the book, there are a dozen or so examples of the goddess America painted, many by Brumidi, the Vatican painter who did the apotheosis. He painted numerous paintings of America throughout the Capitol where she is cradling the primary symbol of America, which is the caduceus, which on one level is a symbol of commerce, but on another level it's a symbol of transformation. And so I think that ultimately, I mean, you can look at this from the sort of the dark negative control side, or you can say, well, these are all symbols of transformation. And I just prefer to look at them as symbols of transformation.
And then right across or above, depending on how you look at it from Washington, below we have Mercury, as you mentioned as well. And one interpretation I heard from that is that he's holding a money bag. It's almost like, is he buying someone off, or is he giving them gold for a good job done, well done? Or what's your take on that, William?
Well, he's handing a Mercury, Hermes to the Greeks, Thoth to the Egyptians. is handing a bag of gold to Robert Morris, the financier of the American Revolution. And when I look at this, I'm thinking, yeah, okay, that could be a payoff. There's something going on there. But then we look at it from the alchemical perspective and say, well, okay, mercury is the symbol for the alchemical transformation of lead into gold.
Mm.
I've been to Rennes-le-Château, France, a half a dozen times, and one of the things that I'm most curious about is the fact that both Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson were in that area. Benjamin Franklin, in particular, was very interested in the mining operation the Knights Templar were running at a little place called Bayeux, which is right beside Rennes-le-Château. According to various Rennes-le-Château researchers, Bayeux was an alchemical foundry. The Knights Templar were there mining the alluvial gold that they could transmute into the white powder. And so I'm sitting here thinking, well, okay, Benjamin Franklin's got a huge interest in alchemy. What kind of gold exactly is mercury handing over to Robert Morris?
Hmm.
Could it be alchemical gold? Are they saying here that that Benjamin Franklin discovered the secrets of the Templars at Rennes-le-Château in the vicinity and brought them back to America and they used them? Anything's possible here.
What if we tie this together with what we're seeing happening in America right now, and in one way even tying this together with Copenhagen and COP15 and potentially future conferences like this? The consensus now is that not only America, but also what they dub the global north or the rich countries are supposed to pay up, as it were, in one sense. Do you see that what America is and what America has been, is that being lost right now? Is it being sold down the drain, or has it yet a purpose, if you will, to fulfill? What's your take on that, William?
Well, I think at the moment America is disintegrating. It clearly is. I think from the global elite kind of perspective, the American experiment is over with, something I'm not particularly happy about. I recognize that we have to bring balance into the world. But when we come back into the capital and we look at the original vision of America and this idea that we can transform, and if our assessment of this painting is correct, and what it's telling us is that Earth is part of a much larger collective, it changes our perspective. And it tells us that maybe at this time, when so many people do anticipate disclosure of our true extraterrestrial predicament, or the true nature of extraterrestrial involvement in earthly affairs, that maybe Washington, that the Capitol still can be that white mountain. What I tell people is that the U.S. Capitol is literally made, that dome is literally made of cast iron. It is a bell, and it can be rung. And further, the dome is modeled after the stupas of India. And the stupas were known to be vortex generators. I mean, the reason why the U.S. Capitol is a power place is because it was designed to be, just like the Vatican. And so the point I make is that five times a day, Muslims turn towards Mecca and pray to a black stone. It unifies them. It somehow gives them that sense of spiritual surety. And I tell people, especially in America, well, what would the effect be if, say, three times a day, people turn towards the U.S. Capitol dome and sent positive intentions and tried to raise the frequency of that dome, use the technology that's there, get it ringing, and begin to bring about a positive change where we're focused on not a one-world controlling government in the end of America, but rather a government or a system that is more based on universal principles, universal spiritual principles, that is rooted in this idea that we are not consumers, but rather we are spiritual beings, and all of us are on a path right now of ascension.
Mm.
And I think that is kind of the crux of what has to happen right now. I mean, the whole world is being treated as if the only thing we're good for is to have the energy sucked out of us, and that's it.
Well, that's right. That's a good point. There's other things overall, I guess, weaved in the whole design and so forth. And then we can go into the area of sacred geometry a little bit as well. Tell us what you found and what you talk about in your book in terms of sacred geometry and the Capitol Dome.
Well, we started with the recognition that the five pagan gods that Constantino Brumidi surrounded George Washington with were arranged in the pattern of a pentacle, which is an extremely important symbol to alchemists. It's a symbol of all five of the alchemical elements. And the idea is that we want to learn to harmonize those elements. So we started playing with some of the sacred geometry of that, looking at what other symbols or what other designs from sacred geometry might fit here. We took the hexagram star, the Seal of Solomon, as it's also called, superimposed it over the apotheosis, and what do you know? The points of the hexagram, the Seal of Solomon, the six-pointed star, also fit perfectly. Each of the points hit one of the five pagan gods, plus the sixth figure that is shown around Washington, which is the goddess Freedom. On top of the U.S. Capitol is a 19.5-foot-tall statue of the goddess Freedom. She's the goddess of America, the symbol of America. And in the apotheosis, Brumidi portrays her wearing a very interesting getup. She has the sword of God in her hand. She has the shield of God in her other hand. She wears a crown of stars with the freedom cap that equates with what's called the helmet of salvation. And I bet if she wears on her chest the breastplate of righteousness, and if we could see her feet, I bet she's wearing the sandals of peace. The sword of God, the shield of God, the helmet of salvation, the breastplate of righteousness, the sandals of peace, these are the garments worn by the spiritual warriors, the light warriors in the Book of Ephesians, and is another key that tells us that this scene is not earthly, it's heavenly. And what Brumidi is trying to tell us is that there is a spiritual battle that is being fought on earth right now, and Freedom is the protector of America. And in order for us to protect freedom, even worldwide, all of us are going to have to put on the light warrior's suit. We're going to have to learn to protect ourselves, not by putting Bluetooth devices in our ear, cell phones in our tooth, artificial hearts and limbs, and all this other stuff they've got planned for us, but rather to develop our spiritual well-being.
Well, there are so many, you detail basically that there are so many stargates all around us, encoded or embedded into the architecture of many cities from around the world.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Basically, you know, symbols of enlightenment and potentially then the true enlightenment, so to speak, not the faulty one, if we can put it that way. They're all around us, but yet so many are seem to be missing the point, and even though they might visit them and look at them and so forth, they are kind of missing the point, if you know what I mean. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think part of it is timing, it's awareness. I have in one of my blogs, I talk about some of my journeys around. Well, of course, I was in Ireland earlier this year, and. But in the blog I'm referring to, if you'll just keep scrolling down my site, you'll go to a place I call Stargate Dallas.
Yes.
And I show Dallas, Texas, and this amazing Tower of Babel type structure. And inside it is this Fibonacci spiral of this amazing stained glass. The place is called Thanksgiving Square. And in this place, Thanksgiving Square, which I visited with a friend of mine who had lived in Dallas over 20 years, and never even knew this place was there. And in the center of Thanksgiving Square is this amazing golden ring. It's a Stargate. It was built in 1996. It's a model of a Stargate. In Detroit, Michigan, we find another bit of sculpture called Transcending that's 90 feet tall. That's another portal or Stargate. This stuff is showing up everywhere. And I think what's happening is that the subconscious of the collective mind of humankind is starting to give us these new symbols of wholeness and unity and even holiness, because the Stargate is a holy symbol. It's not a military symbol like you see in Contact and that ridiculous TV show Stargate. The military has nothing to do with Stargates and all of this. This is all about a spiritual transformation that is required here. It's a spiritual symbol. And I think, one, that the symbol of the Stargate is going to replace the crucifix in the 21st century. And I'm not saying there's going to be a new religion necessarily of the Stargate, but I think there is going to be a spiritual awareness built on the idea of the ring, of the gate, of the portal, of transcendence, and especially of thanksgiving and gratitude. Gratitude is the attitude that I like to say that opens these gates. And I think it's about timing. It's like there's a time lock on it. It's like nobody decoded the secrets of the apotheosis of George Washington until me and Dr. Gray and Dan Brown came along, and then we figured it out all at the same time. It's kind of the same thing with this artwork that's appearing in major cities all around the world. It's starting to pop up, and what I encourage people to do, which is what I like to do, is when you go to these places, into these civic centers, read what's written on the wall. Sometimes you're going to find some of the deepest metaphysical concepts expressed in either the title of this artwork or literally written in the stone that accompanies these gateways.
Well, go ahead.
And I was just going to say that now is the time, I think, for us to become aware of this artwork and recognizing that each of these portals that we find in these urban centers are awaiting activation. And very often, especially in Detroit, the portal in Detroit is a place of huge civic gatherings. And I think you'll find that in many of these cities.
Well, and one point here as well is then that the people who are building these obviously have a different, possibly then, a different take on it. Again, they could be acting just out of a higher force that you mentioned before, that they basically don't maybe 100% know exactly what they do in one way. They get the sculpture given to them through inspiration, and they act on it, so to speak. Or do you think that we're talking about a different class, so to speak, here of people in that sense who know exactly what they're doing, they know what it could be used for, and do you think that they have an idea about, yes, I hope that this will transformate things for the better into something good, or what do you think about that, William?
Well, that's to answer your question, I'll give you a tidbit I picked up when I was looking at Stargate Detroit. At Hart Plaza, there's the transcending sculpture there. And then right beside the transcending sculpture, which is a classic Stargate-type Stargate, except it's like 90 feet tall. And then right beside transcending is a fountain done by a Japanese sculptor named Noguchi. Now, the story I'm going to tell you here was first, I think, documented by Richard Hoagland in one of his books. Noguchi was a Japanese art student, Japanese-American, and in 1947, after the U.S. dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Noguchi, being a Japanese person, got very concerned that, well, what if we blew ourselves up and nobody knew that human civilization was here? And so in 1947, he sculpted or envisioned a mile-high sculpture of a human face that he called, if memory serves me right, it was something like Face That Could Be Seen from Mars.
Mm-hmm. Really?
1947. Mm. Then in 1976, the Viking orbiter takes pictures of Mars and sees the face on Mars, right?
Yep.
Noguchi's face, the face that could be seen from Mars, and the face on Mars are almost identical.
Oh, really?
How do you account for that?
Huh.
And how do you account that Noguchi is doing this fountain here at Stargate Plaza, Hart Plaza in Detroit, and it has this amazing tie-in? Were spirits of Martians transmitting something to – was Noguchi channeling Martians? Is there a spirit that's just kind of running through this? And he picked up on it. And then, lo and behold, in 1976, that same image comes forward. It's really strange. At Hart Plaza, this is the site where Martin Luther King gave the first version of his famous I Have a Dream speech. He gave two versions of that. The famous one that everybody knows about was in Washington, D.C., when there were a couple hundred thousand or half a million people there. In Detroit, before he went to D.C., he gave a version of that speech that had a slightly different ending. And as I read the transcript of the Detroit speech, I was just stunned by what I call the Stargate metaphysics in the speech. Dr. King said, "I have a dream this afternoon that the brotherhood of man will become a reality in this day. And with this faith, I will go out and carve a tunnel of hope through a mountain of despair. That's the way I think of the symbol of the Stargate or the wormhole, is the tunnel of hope that we carve through the mountain of despair. The symbol of the ring, the Stargate is the symbol for the impossible. If we can achieve Stargate metaphysics or wormhole consciousness, we're going to be good to go, ready to rock. And as I said earlier, Dr. Michio Kaku thinks we're a million years away from that. I think we're much closer to that. I think we're maybe right on it now. And when you look up in Norway and you see a wormhole, or what millions of people around the world would agree is a wormhole, you have to ask, are we carving tunnels of hope now through mountains of despair? Are we ready to jump up to the next level of our spiritual and other evolution? I think the answer is absolutely yes.
1947, you mentioned as well, very interesting year overall, considering how many things were going on, you know, back then. But also one thing that comes to mind here is, for instance, you went to CERN, you said, and you were on the outside there. For instance, they have a statue of Shiva, the feared one, or in some cases known as the destroyer as well. That's another one of these. Wait a minute, what is the message here? Are they talking about the destroyer of worlds? And maybe my take on it is wrong, but I also thought that Shiva was considered to be not only the destroyer, but also the creator, one who sets everything, destroys everything, and then put it back into place again. Maybe you can talk about that, William.
Yeah, I went to CERN. I'm not a physicist. I don't know much about the high-energy physics works that they're doing there. I can follow along and understand conceptually what they're doing. I went there because I wanted to see, show me your artwork. When I go to cities, when I go anywhere, show me your artwork. I want to see your artwork.
Yeah.
So here I go to CERN, just wanting to see what's on your mind there, because I knew they weren't allowing religious artwork there. CERN, of course, was formed immediately after World War II. It was an answer to the Nazis and an answer to American aggression, too. They knew that they watched the parade of high-energy physics types leaving Germany, going to Russia, going to the United States, and they could see that if these guys are going to the United States, they're going to be building weapons. And it's not going to be long before they have even more horrific weapons than the atomic bomb. So the high-energy physics types get together at CERN on the border there of Geneva and France and say, let's develop high-energy physics applications for purely peaceful purposes. And so we're going to keep the religious stuff out of it. We're going to keep all that other stuff out of it. Well, when you go there, it turns out there is a piece of religious art there. You mentioned it. It's the statue of Shiva, which was a gift from the people of India. And when I think of Shiva, yeah, I agree. Shiva is a very terrifying figure. But what we see is Shiva, who's also called the Lord of the Dance, dancing inside of a ring, a Stargate symbol, a portal, and stamping out ignorance. And I thought there was a profound message there, that the idea is that if we can achieve the Stargate consciousness, this is how we can stamp out ignorance. And so that was a very important piece of art there. Another important piece for me was, and again, as you notice, I like to look at people's logos.
Yes.
What's your logo? What's your symbol? And it turns out the folks at CERN put out a newsletter. It's called Interactions. And what the Interactions logo is it shows a couple of these particles colliding with one another. And you see sort of the spray of light coming from the particle. Well, it was kind of interesting. I took that spray of the God particle, the stylized logo, and superimposed it over another one of my transfiguration images that shows Jesus emerging through the gate. And what do you know? It fit wonderfully over that. I thought, well, that's kind of fascinating. And then as I'm walking around, I see this image of another piece of art at CERN, which is one of the only few really pieces of art that you see there, was the logo for CERN is a dove, symbol of peace, spewing the symbol of the God particle, this spray sort of a particle. And when I looked at that, I said, that's really interesting, because isn't the dove also the symbol for the Christian Holy Spirit?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so what they're showing us in another level of interpretation is that, okay, they're talking about the God particle, which we could easily call that the Christ particle, and their logo is a match for this idea that what they're ultimately talking about here is the revelation of these spiritual mysteries in the guise of science that potentially can stamp out ignorance and enable us to get up to the next level, to Stargate metaphysics.
I think that's a good note, William, to begin to round things up for this time. It's been so interesting talking with you about basically hidden symbols here in the second hour, and also some of your travels that you've been doing. And we will obviously keep a very keen eye on not only the developments here in close to us here in Copenhagen, but also, of course, in terms of the Norway spiral, if something more like this comes up. And I'll bet you will be doing the same on your blog and on your website, keep tracking this and looking for the further confirmation, I guess, in terms of these symbols and basically potentially events also upcoming here with them.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for your work and your dedication to actually going to Copenhagen and getting a look-see for yourself. There's nothing that can replace that. And so thank you so much for being there for us.
Excellent. Thank you, William. And again, for us, please mention your website and also, of course, the primary book that we've been talking about here, Freedom's Gate. And then you have a DVD out there as well called The American Right. Isn't that correct?
Yes, I do. I have The American Right, and I also have a new DVD called Freedom's Gate, Decoding the Dome of Ascension in the U.S. Capitol, and as well as Morph, The Secret of Light Body Activation, which discusses many of the things that we've talked about today.
Okay, excellent. Again, the website, williamhenry.net. Head on over there, check it out. Thank you so much, William, for coming on.
Thank you very much, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
That's our program with William Henry. Good to have you with us. More Red Ice Radio will be brought to you during the holidays. Stay tuned, and we'll be premiering Red Ice TV soon as well. We're starting up on 2012 and then COP15. Thanks to Fredrik, Elizabeth, and Lana, and we will talk more to you soon. Bye-bye.